Welcome to today's Strategic Housing Podcast, where our goals are to connect people, share innovative ideas, and collaborate with partners on affordable housing opportunities and replicable models that strengthen our communities in Kentucky and across the nation. My name is Edwin King, and I'm the Executive Director of the Kentucky Housing Corporation. Joining me for today's podcast is special guest Stockton Williams, who was appointed in 2018 as the Executive Director of the National Council of State Housing Agencies, or NCSHA in short. Stockton joined us on a previous podcast in 2018 about his new role as Executive Director and his vision for the arena of affordable housing, and we're happy he could join us again today for our conversation about GSE reform. If you haven't had the opportunity to meet Stockton Williams, I'd like to introduce him to our audience as a high-energy leader, strategist, and advocate with over 25 years in housing development, finance, policy, research, and an impressive career dedicated to expanding housing opportunities. Stockton leads NCSHA's wide-ranging efforts to advocate and strengthen the central role of state housing finance agencies in the nation's housing system. NCSHA's state housing finance agency members have delivered nearly $500 billion in financing to make possible the purchase, development, and rehabilitation of more than 7 million affordable homes for low and moderate income households, and Kentucky is proud to be one of these agencies. Previously, Stockton served as Executive Vice President of Content and Executive Director of the Terwilliger Center for Housing and the Urban Land Institute. He previously served as Senior Advisor in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and the U.S. Department of Energy. Stockton holds a Master of Science in Real Estate Development from Columbia University and a Bachelor of Arts in Religion from Princeton University. He is also an author and frequent media commentator on housing issues and an advisor to local communities across the United States. Stockton, I appreciate you being my guest today, and welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Edwin. It's great to be back.
Today, we're going to discuss the GSEs, or government-sponsored enterprises, and housing finance reform. The new director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, or FHFA for short, Mark Calabria, has discussed his willingness to listen to HFAs on the topic of housing finance reform. Stockton, do you have any insights into how initial discussions are going with them?
Well, Edwin, as you mentioned, the subject of GSE reform is complicated. And to help our listeners engage in this conversation with us today, I thought I'd just say a few words first about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the GSEs, as we call them, and the Federal Housing Finance Agency, the FHFA. And then we'll talk about Mark Calabria, the new director of that important agency. But as many listeners may know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are private companies with federal charters that give them special privileges, such as being exempt from some state and local taxes, and special responsibilities. Most importantly for housing finance agencies, responsibilities to support affordable housing for low and middle-income households. The GSEs are not lenders. They don't originate mortgages, but through their credit guarantee business, they provide liquidity. They make it possible for banks and other originators to make mortgage loans and also to provide financing for apartment development and construction. These companies are huge. They own or guarantee something like half of all the mortgages in the United States. And for the last 10 years or so, they have been in conservatorship, meaning as a result of hitting financial trouble during the housing downturn, they voluntarily agreed to go under the authority, the regulatory authority of an entity called a conservator, the Federal Housing Finance Agency. And FHFA is an enormously important and powerful agency, and its mission is really to bolster and restore confidence in the market in the financial underpinnings and stability of Fannie and Freddie. As part of that, Fannie and Freddie are required to channel almost all of their annual profits to the Treasury Department. Even though they've been in conservatorship since 2008, they've actually been profitable, quite profitable companies since 2012. So they did receive a bailout to the tune of around $190 billion from the taxpayers after the housing market meltdown. But since that time, they've actually paid back and more. Currently, I believe it paid back around $279 billion and are continuing to pay. So the taxpayers have ended up doing all right as a result of the conservatorship under FHFA. But as taxpayers are sort of benefiting, so to speak, from the company's current profitability, they're also really taking a lot of the risks of these two companies, which play such a huge role in the mortgage market. So that's really what brings us to where we are today. to a brand new director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, Mark Calabria, in his plans for the agency, which we're going to talk about. But just to give you a sense of the state HFA's relationship with Mark, we at the National Council of State Housing Agency have known him for many, many years. He's had a number of high-level policy jobs in Washington, D.C. We have a good and longstanding personal relationship with him. Mark also understands the important role that state housing finance agencies. And so later this summer, a group of us will be meeting with Mark to start laying out our priorities on this huge topic of GSE reform.
Well, I know we obviously talked about ending the conservatorship of the GSEs for quite a while now. Actually, you know, they went into conservatorship back when I was in D.C., over 10 years ago. What does the path, and again, this has been discussed for years now, but it's really heated up here recently. What is the path to end the conservatorship of the GSEs look like right now, or what should it look like?
Those are two great questions. And again, I'll start with a little bit of background for our listeners about why this matters so much to housing finance agencies and to the National Council of State Housing Agencies. Underneath that big macro level role of providing liquidity to the whole housing system that I was describing, Fannie and Freddie also have responsibilities that are in law to help ensure that mortgage credit is accessible and available in all parts of every state, including smaller rural or distressed urban areas, and for all qualified borrowers, including minority home buyers, lower and middle income families who are not necessarily well served by the lending system where they live. The responsibilities that Fannie and Freddie have are laid out in law, and we'll talk about some of the specifics of them. But the main thing to understand when we're talking about conservatorship is that as for-profit businesses, the way that Fannie and Freddie are able to meet their affordable housing responsibilities, which by definition aren't as lucrative or profitable for them, is through what we call a cross-subsidy. And essentially what that means is that the fees to less riskier borrowers, borrowers with stronger credit and other characteristics, are a little bit higher than they otherwise would be through Fannie and Freddie's financing. And that enables the companies to make sure that folks with more challenged credit or in harder to reach communities can still benefit from accessible and available mortgage financing. That's really the underpinning of how Fannie and Freddie ensure access and affordability in the system. And it's part of the regulatory responsibilities that FHFA makes sure they carry out. So what will conservatorship look like? What should it look like under the new director, Mark Calabria? Well, he's made several high-profile speeches, most recently to the group of mortgage bankers in New York City. I'll read you one line from his published remarks. "The status quo is no longer an option. The status quo is over. And my arrival at FHFA should be seen as the opening bell for change." So under Mark's directorship, things will change. Now, to be fair, Fannie and Freddie have undergone substantial changes. They're stronger companies, better managed, strengthened in many aspects of their operations during the period leading up to Mark's arrival as director. But Mark has real ambitions to end conservatorship. He and FHFA do not need Congress to approve that to occur. And Mark has made very, very clear that ending conservatorship is an important goal for him and one he's already working on. We can talk a little bit about what it would actually take to end conservatorship, but one of the most important and essential steps is to recapitalize Fannie and Freddie. I mentioned that even though they make lots of money, almost all of their profits go back to the treasury. That means they're very thinly capitalized, especially for companies with the assets and the outstanding mortgage balances that they have. So step one to start to release them from conservatorship would really be to enable Fannie and Freddie to start building back capital, the kinds of capital that any regulated financial institution with their level of exposure in the market, their amount of aggregate assets have. As profitable as they are, that would take a long, long time. So one of the things Mark has suggested is that in addition to allowing them to retain more of their earnings as a first step out of conservatorship, some sort of initial public offering or other mechanism to raise additional capital for these companies may be forthcoming. There are lots of complicated legal and financial issues to think through there, but that does certainly seem to be the direction that FHFA is going. Now, in terms of what should conservatorship or what should the regulatory environment for Fannie and Freddie look like, NCSHA's main objective on behalf of state housing finance agencies is to say that however their regulated status may evolve, those affordable housing responsibilities, that requirement that they make credit available and accessible widely throughout the system, that's got to remain. And it's FHFA's job to make sure that Fannie and Freddie are faithfully and fully executing on that responsibility that's in law. So we'll see how that plays out. There could be bigger changes to the housing finance system and how Fannie and Freddie and potentially new competitors to them emerge. And those will really take actions by Congress, which I think brings us to one of our next questions.
Yeah, well, certainly capital is the most important piece to this big puzzle. And, you know, prior to 2008, there was sort of this implicit government guarantee behind the GSEs. But of course, we saw that that was an explicit guarantee at that time. Senator Mike Crapo has proposed sort of a multiple guarantor system. Do you see Senator Crapo's proposal gaining any traction? And what is the congressional will in GSE reform?
Yeah, and this is such an important question because we've been talking for the most part about what Fannie and Freddie's regulator can do with the authority that it has under law, and it can do a lot. But to sort of fully reform the housing finance system to really make sure that the credit risk is widely dispersed, that the taxpayers are almost entirely off the hook for all but sort of catastrophic risk, and to make sure that affordable credit continues to be made widely available, Congress has to get into action. It has to change the underlying laws that govern Fannie and Freddie and other companies as well and agencies that we'll talk about. So one of those important policymakers in the U.S. Congress is Senator Mike Crapo from Idaho. He is the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee. He's very expert in housing finance. He's been working on this issue for a number of years, has put forward legislative proposals in the past, and earlier this year released a pretty detailed outline of legislation that we expect he'll introduce in full fairly soon. Some of the highlights of Senator Crapo's bill would really be to not just move Fannie and Freddie into a fully privatized status, also create a whole new system of mortgage guarantors, private companies that would play similar roles. So these new companies, as well as Fannie and Freddie, would apply to the FHFA, that regulator we keep talking about, to buy government insurances for qualified mortgage-backed securities that would be issued by Ginnie Mae, a government agency. FHFA's role would be to charter all these new guarantors, in addition to Fannie and Freddie, who might emerge, set the capital and liquidity standards, approve their pricing, and play that regulatory role that FHFA currently plays over Fannie and Freddie for a new set of players in a more privatized system. Now, Senator Crapo also has some pretty bold ideas for the affordable housing responsibilities of Fannie and Freddie. Right now, the way it works, in addition to that sort of broad cross-subsidy I mentioned that enables pricing to be a little more favorable for folks who have a harder time getting a mortgage, there's only three legs of the affordable housing stool for Fannie and Freddie. One is every year they're assessed a fee on their total amount of new business, and that goes into a trust fund, an affordable housing trust fund that in many states is administered by the state housing finance agency. And those dollars, those grant dollars, provide subsidy for very difficult to do affordable housing developments that serve extremely low income people. And this is not a huge federal program, just a couple $100 million, but an important source of subsidy for very difficult to do affordable housing. The second leg of the stool is a requirement that Fannie and Freddie have to stimulate or induce additional lending for niches in the market that have been really, really hard to reach. They call this the Fannie and Freddie's duty to serve requirement, and specifically directs them to push additional lending into manufactured housing, into rural areas, and into the preservation of existing affordable rental apartments. So that's the second leg of the affordability stool, so to speak. And then the third, and maybe the most important, is Fannie and Freddie actually have goals for shares of their overall business activity meeting various affordable lending targets, income levels, essentially. These are so-called affordable housing goals. So the trust fund, the duty to serve requirement, and the affordable housing goals are the sort of three legs of this affordability stool for Fannie and Freddie under current law. Senator Crapo, at least as far as we can tell from his outline, would really kind of get rid of the affordable housing goals and the duty to serve requirement and replace them, and also put funding into the trust fund that I mentioned with a larger fee on Fannie and Freddie's new business. So instead of the current fee, which is about 4 basis points of the company's total loan volume, under Senator Crapo's proposal, it would be 10 basis, a substantial amount more money than collected through the current fee. But what we're not sure about is whether the overall amount of support for the affordable part of the market would still be as diversified and effective under this approach as under current law. So that's one of the really important areas of Senator Crapo's plan that we're interested to see more details of and want to make sure we do at least as much, if not more, for affordable housing as the current system does. Just real quick, of course, Senator Crapo will have a lot to say about what the Senate does. He's got the ability to bring a full-blown version of his proposal through his committee, mark it up, and see a committee vote on it, and potentially then, with Leader McConnell's okay, bring it for a vote to the Senate floor. Most people don't think he'll do that until and unless he sees at least some level of action over in the House. The House, of course, is controlled by the Democrats. The head of the House Financial Services Committee is Maxine Waters from Los Angeles. She's very interested in affordable housing issues, but hasn't really developed nearly the level of detailed proposal or done as much on housing finance reform in Fannie and Freddie, at least so far, as Senator Crapo has. So it's hard to predict what the real dynamics in the legislative environment will be. Of course, the 2020 presidential campaign already feels like it started, I guess it has started in a way. As that heats up, it will certainly cast an ever greater shadow over the legislative environment, Congress. And so it's probably unlikely that the Senate Republicans and the House Democrats will come together and agree on something that could actually make its way to President Trump's desk for the 2020 election. But we do expect, you know, further congressional hearings, potentially additional details and legislative proposals, and we'll certainly be weighing in actively on those as they're developed.
Well, Stockton, I think the GSEs are doing a good job pushing credit risk into the private market. However, I would say that some people might say that we still have this too big to fail system with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And I think whatever reform looks like, I think we need to be clear on what role we want the government to play and what role we want private markets to play without disrupting capital markets during the reform process.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what makes a lot of this so tricky. You know, I mentioned that since 2012, Fannie and Freddie have been profitable. They've more than paid back the bailout they received from you and me and all the other taxpayers, and they're continuing to pay into the Treasury's coffers. So that sounds pretty good, but that also means that taxpayers are still really on the hook for what could happen to these companies and to the broader housing system if the housing market and the broader economy gets into another spot of trouble, even if it's not as bad as it was 10, 12 years ago. At the same time, simply, you know, releasing them from conservatorship with more capital, what some people inside the Beltway call recap and release, really just puts the system back to where it was prior to the housing bust. So that really doesn't solve much of a problem either. And that's really why when you listen to Mark Calabria, the head of FHFA, or Senator Crapo, both of whom we've talked about, or lots of other experts and advocates involved in this discussion, they really all generally believe that FHFA should continue some of the initiatives that are underway to transfer more credit risk, which has already been happening to the private sector, to develop a uniform mortgage-backed common security for Fannie and Freddie, to do the things to try to, you know, reduce the GSE's footprint appropriately, bring in some more private sector competition. At the same time, the Congress also works on some legislative changes because really both are going to have continued regulatory improvements and then ultimately the legislative fixes to really have a housing system that is strong in the areas that we want to bolster, reduces risk where that's important, and, you know, continues to provide at least reasonably good access and availability to lower income.
Yeah. So we here at Kentucky Housing Corporation, we're a Fannie seller servicer. And one thing I'm really interested in is what GSE reform does to servicers and servicing. Servicing is a very multifaceted line of business that can have a wide variety of different processes. Currently, the GSEs offer a very uniform standard of servicing that allows portfolios to be more predictable to the investors, which, of course, that creates a more stable market. Stockton, do you see NCSHA's and HFA's goals? Because I know there's several Fannie seller servicers across the country. Do you see NCSHA and HFA reform goals lining up with the goals in the private sector?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is where sometimes reading in the political news or the business press about what's happening or what's not happening or what people are arguing about on the subject of housing demand reform may not quite fully capture the level of agreement and alignment among a public mission, affordable housing-focused organizations like the National Council of State Housing Agencies and the main private sector groups. In fact, on really all of the key principles of what a reformed and improved housing finance system should look like, there's very, very broad agreement. In fact, a number of organizations, including NCSHA, the Mortgage Bankers Association, the National Association of Home Builders, the National Association of Realtors, really all of the leading private sector trade groups in the housing system, along with leading affordable housing advocates, sent a joint letter to the FHFA. This was before Mark Calabria was confirmed, but we knew he was coming, and laid out areas of common agreement. And they certainly include the importance of continuing the availability of the 30-year fixed rate mortgage and some of the sort of pillars of the housing system as we know it. But importantly, they also, this joint statement also talked about maintaining the Fannie and Freddie's obligations to meet the needs of underserved areas, deliver on, you know, reasonable data-based housing goals, and support an affordable housing trust fund. So across the sort of industry group representatives, private sector and nonprofit, there's lots of agreement on the core elements of what the stronger and improved housing finance system should look like. Where there are probably more disagreements, are in the political environment. And so there certainly are points of view among some members of Congress and in some think tanks that really don't think the government ought to have much role at all in the housing market, and especially shouldn't be doing much to expand home ownership, provide mortgage financing for credit challenged or lower income or struggling borrowers who can't meet sort of conventional credit underwriting. There are some who have that view. Then there are some who have the view that, in fact, the government's role in the housing system isn't big enough. Fannie and Freddie and other government agencies actually ought to be putting more capital, taking more risk to stimulate housing development, to make credit available for folks who have a harder time accessing it. But really, those two kind of points of view on kind of each end of the continuum, they don't really represent where most of the folks and organizations who are actually in the business of housing finance really are. Among the private sector and advocates, there really is a lot of common ground, and hopefully that could be something to build on and try to bring more extreme edges of the ideological discussion a little closer together.
Well, Stockton, this has definitely been a very insightful discussion here. And before we wrap up the podcast today, I just want to shift gears and briefly discuss a recent win for NCSHA and HFAs regarding the IRS-issued guidance on housing bond financing for projects that serve veterans and other special populations. Can you speak a little bit about that win?
No, I really appreciate that question, Edwin. As I think your listeners know, the low-income housing tax credit, which is a federal program that's run by state housing finance agencies, has really been the main engine for the development and preservation of affordable apartments, especially for very low-income people and special populations like homeless vets, families with special needs, people with disabilities, and others. For a long, long time, the housing credit program itself has been able to provide some housing for these special populations. But when housing credits are combined with bond finance from state housing finance agencies, the IRS rules had said you don't have the ability to target some of those real special populations. In other words, there was a sort of difference in the tax rules for that low-income housing tax credit program and the bond program. So NCSHA and other organizations spent a lot of time last fall and winter and were successful in getting the IRS to come out and clarify that, in fact, a low-income housing tax credit financed property that also has bond financing can, in fact, target homeless vets and other special populations. So the result is that in states like California and Texas and Florida and other places that are really focused on providing special needs housing, housing for special populations, they're able to do more of it with the resources of the state housing finance agency. So we're really proud of the role that some of our leadership, state housing finance agency executive directors from a number of places, including California, where the housing agency is led by Tia Boatman-Patterson, who's NCSHA's current chair, were very active in those discussions. And it turned out to be a good move by the IRS that didn't cost the taxpayers a penny and will enable housing finance agencies to serve more folks who need housing assistance.
Well, I was certainly proud that the board of directors stepped up to make that clarification, and certainly thank you all for your leadership there. Stockton, thank you again for your time with us today and discussing GSEs and housing finance reform and, of course, the IRS issued guidance around that bond financing, which is certainly critical in helping at-risk populations. To our audience, you can visit the website for NCSHA at www.ncsha.org. Thank you for connecting with us today and listening to this podcast. You're welcome to join the conversation by leaving comments, and please share today's podcast in your social media streams to help us broaden our conversation. Also, we invite you to follow us on social media. Until next time, thank you.